and welcome back to Weird on the Rocks. This is a podcast that explores the weird, unusual, strange, and unexplained, all while getting our drink on. I'm your host, Katie. Today is going to be the fourth segment of my small town spooky series. I really like doing these episodes because it's really fun and interesting to read stories from you guys, from my actual listeners. But honestly, it's also kind of nice to take a break from researching for a week. I spend at least 5 hours researching each episode, usually a lot more. But with these, I can just read your stories and sit back and take a little bit of a break from all that researching. So I really enjoy these. And thank you to everyone who has sent their stories in. And if you want a story to be read in the next Small Town Spooky segment, please get a hold of me. I'm always looking for new stories. They don't have to be paranormal. They can just be something strange or, you know, unexplained that happened to you, an old family story, whatever. I'm open to anything. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Weird on the Rocks Podcast. You can just shoot me a message on either of those or email me at weirdontherocks@yahoo.com. Please rate and review on iTunes and push the subscribe button wherever you're listening now so that you are notified when a new episode comes out. Before we get into the good stuff, I want to share this week's beverage of choice. Tonight, I'm drinking just a simple glass of white wine. I usually go for Sauvignon Blanc, and this one is from the Prophecy brand. You've probably seen their wine at the store. They have beautiful bottles. Honestly, they could be like decor in your home. I've used them as vases before. They're really, really pretty. Their wine's good too, but I definitely am drawn to pretty bottles. And at this point when I'm recording, we still have a shelter in place here in California due to COVID-19. So I'm kind of running out of alcohol options. So this was the last of the wine in the bottle. So I'm really going to savor this. So yeah, we're just doing a boring old glass of wine tonight. That's I'm getting down to the bottom of my quarantine supplies. All right, well, cheers and let's get weird. All right, so this first story comes from Katie, and she says, "Hey, I absolutely love the podcast, and I have a few stories to share. The first story happened before I was born and when my older sister was a month old. Our Aunt Laura died from cancer, and my mom, aunts, and uncles were absolutely crushed. Flash forward 3 years later, when I was but a wee one and my older sister was three. Our Aunt Wanda was visiting us, and that night she slept out in the living room. In the middle of the night, she heard my sister crying, and she said, 'Come on out, Sarah.' Sarah kept crying, and my aunt was about to get up when she heard my sister's door open. She saw Sarah coming out of the room, being led by a woman in a long white gown. She had her hair in her face, so you couldn't really see her too well. Once in the living room, the woman tucked Sarah in at the foot of the couch. Before my Aunt Wanda could say thanks, she turned around and, without saying anything, went back into my parents' room, closing the door behind her. The next morning, over breakfast, my aunt thanked my mom for bringing my sister out to her. 'What are you talking about, Wanda?' my mom asked. 'You know, when you went into Sarah's room and tucked her in at the foot of the couch.' 'Wanda, I didn't do that. I didn't even hear her crying.' My Aunt Wanda looked up and saw my mom was wearing a short pink nightgown and that she didn't even own a white nightgown. I guess it was my Aunt Laura checking in on us or something." Another story is one from when my mom and aunts were teenagers. They had a Ouija board and they played with it. My Aunt Sandy asked who she would marry and it said Lewart, L-E-W-A-R-T. My aunts made fun of her saying she was going to be a wart or something. On her wedding day, my Aunt Sandy married my uncle Larry Ewart, otherwise known as Lewart. On a quick note, my grandparents' house is built on a Native American burial ground where they found some red oak coffins with roses engraved on them. To make matters even worse, my Uncle Brian died in the house 2 years ago. It's no wonder my grandma has been seeing things move all on their own, hearing doors slam in different parts of the house, and once she swore she heard my uncle talking in the room that he died in. This next one comes from Martha, and she says, "So this story is from the early 90s. My mom died in 1990 from cancer. My family is from Rhode Island. At that time, my parents had this condo in Florida. They hadn't had it long, maybe 5 years. They planned to retire down there. Unfortunately, mom died young, so that didn't happen. Anyway, I'd only ever made it down there a couple of times because it was just after I had graduated college and I was broke and always had something better to do, like partying. Well, the year after she died, my father had rented the condo to an elderly couple for the winter. He didn't want to go there without mom, and that couple vacated the condo in April. My dad was bemoaning having to hire cleaners to clean it after they left, so I offered to go down and clean it if he paid for my flight. Good deal. My plan was to stay a week. My younger sister planned to drive down with a friend of hers and arrive a couple days after me, stay for like 4 days, then drive back. Good plan. Party. So I get there and I dump my stuff in the master bedroom. My plan was to chill out the day I arrived and start cleaning the next day. This condo was one floor. It had the living room and kitchen at the back of the house, then a hallway towards the front where the two bedrooms were. There was a master bedroom at the end of the hall with a bathroom off it and a guest room. As I'm going into the master bedroom, the beds are like stripped down and I notice blood on the pillow and it sort of spilled down onto the mattress and dripped down the side of the bed. It looked like enough blood that it was concerning that someone had been significantly hurt or had a serious nosebleed. So, stupidly, my first thought is not like, what the fuck, who died? But it's, how am I going to clean that? Old people are gross. So I come to the conclusion that if there's blood around, I have to clean now before I can even stay there. Still not really cluing in that I should be alarmed. I know, right? Oh, to be clueless 20-something again. So I decided to start in the master bedroom and bathroom, ignoring the bloody bed at first because I really didn't even know what to do with it. I started cleaning in the bathroom and was scrubbing away on my hands and knees on the floor, and all of a sudden I just get this chill. The room goes ice cold and I get the sense of something big standing behind me and over me. I don't know how to explain it except that I just felt it. It was evil and it made me literally freeze with the awareness of it. Stop what I was doing. It literally was just coming out of nowhere. I turn around and there's nothing there but the sense of darkness. So I get up and I book it out of that room. I was terrified. Now I'm sitting in the living room at the other end of this condo like, oh my God, what was that? And what do I do now? All my stuff is in there. I can't avoid going back in. I have to go get my stuff. It took me like 15 minutes to get the courage up, but I go back in there to grab my stuff. As I'm reaching for my bag, trying not to go into the room more than I need to, I look at the bed again. The blood on the pillow and bed were gone, like it evaporated or was never there in the first place. Okay, fine, fuck that noise. Close the door and don't go back in that room. Hope this thing stays back in there and doesn't come out. I slept in the spare room that night. My sister and her friend arrive 2 days later and I tell them I'm not sleeping in there, that they can have either bedroom and I'll just sleep on the couch. I said I felt something and I was scared of that room. They were like, oh, we don't care, we'll take the master. They go back there. They come back out not 10 minutes later. We aren't sleeping in there. I asked if they saw anything and they just said, we felt it. We aren't sleeping in there. So they stayed in the spare room and I camped out on the couch. The next 4 days were uneventful. We were busy and had fun. We kept that room closed and none of us ever went back there again. I think I even left the cleaning stuff as it was when I ran away. After their stay, they left and I had one more night to spend in there by myself. My flight was relatively early the next day, maybe 9 a.m., so I got all packed and all I had to do in the morning was shower and leave. I was nervous about staying there myself, so I stayed on the couch and I figured I would keep the TV on so I would be distracted and hopefully not be too scared. So I'm dozing and sort of half asleep. At one point, I kind of open my eyes a little bit, like you do when you aren't really asleep, and I see short shadow people, creatures, darting around out of the corner of my eyes. Holy shit. Terrifying. I'm telling myself it's just a dream because I'm scared and my mind is playing tricks on me and I'm trying to force myself just to go back to sleep. I refuse to open my eyes again. And then all of a sudden, the TV goes to static and the volume is up full force. I jump out of my skin. Seriously, I grab the remote and try to turn it off. It won't turn off. I try to turn the volume down. No go. I get up and go to the TV and try to turn it off at the power button on the set. It won't turn off. I try to change the channel. All static. I unplug it from the wall. It won't turn off. I'm standing there with the plug in my hand looking at static while these little fuckers are darting around the room. I look at the clock. It's like 2 a.m. and I'm like, fuck this, I'm leaving. I don't care if it's the middle of the night. I'll take my chances with rapists and murderers out there. So I just went into the airport and sat there until I could check in. I left that goddamn TV on its goddamn static channel and those little shadow fuckers behind me. When I got home, I told my dad I was never going back there and that it was evil. I also told him to get someone to go to the house and turn off the TV. The caretaker went in there. TV was unplugged and off. Dad told me that I was crazy. Then I asked, had anyone died in there? He said someone had been murdered in the complex before he bought the place, but he didn't know if it was in our unit. I can tell you 100% it was in our unit. Because of what I felt and saw, but also because my mother was cheap as the day is long, and she wouldn't have hesitated to buy a murder house if it was cheap. My sister and I flat out refused to ever go back, so my dad ended up selling the place a couple years later. This next story is from my friend Alicia. She says, "Hi Katie, we have a short small town spooky for you. Maybe a space filler also, not super spooky, but odd for sure. We moved into our house in 2014, and for the first few years of living here, we would hear music playing softly from the kitchen stove area of the home, always around dinner time. We couldn't find a source of the music. I figured it was coming through the pipes from a neighbor's house. We have a gas stove, although I have never heard of such a thing happening before. It's just the way I rationalized it. We haven't heard the music for the past couple of years, and we haven't had any new music or sounds pop up, so that kind of disproves my theory. Wouldn't new noises pop up too? Our house was built in 1957, so it's an old house, but not that old." All right, this next story comes from Mike, and this is a very long one, so buckle up. He says, "This is a long one, so grab a beer, maybe two. A few years ago, I was working with my brother-in-law. He owned a carpet cleaning business, and I was out of a job, and so I ended up going to work with him for a while. One day, we turned up at this big old house perched on a steep hill made from old granite brick that was weathered and dark. The place looked a bit imposing from the path below where I was standing, but didn't think much of it at the time. After all, we visited lots of houses daily, old and new, large and small, and I'd never been in one that gave me any sort of ghostly scare. After going into some houses and meeting some oddball owners, it was the living that worried me more. However, it was clear just looking at this particular house from the outside that it looked like it had seen a lot of people come and go through the years, was steeped in history, and had a certain aura about it. In more recent times, it was now subdivided into a few separate houses. We climbed the hill, knocked on the door, and we were greeted by a lady and her young son who was off school for the end of term holidays, and then shown inside to the kitchen that still retained a lot of its original features and character. A real wood fire set into a chimney breast, a wood-burning cooking stove, granite-tiled floor, farmhouse-style furniture, and lots of exposed original oak beams and brick. The job was for the upstairs of the house, so we took a quick look at the three or so bedrooms and the wraparound landing area that were to be cleaned, and then started lugging the heavy equipment from the van up the path to the top of the hill, and then up a flight of paved steps and into the kitchen. With multiple trips to and from the van, we were pretty exhausted despite just starting the job. So we had a quick rest while setting up the equipment. My brother-in-law engaged in the usual small talk with the owner, mainly about the weather, which was dire as usual for autumn in the northwest of England, while I unpacked the various brushes and cleaning fluids that we would need for the job. Things then started to get a bit weird. The conversation changed to the history of the house. The owner mentioned that they had recently brought in some archdiocese from the church to bless the place and to stop all the weird bump-in-the-night stuff that had apparently been happening to her, her son, and her husband over the past few years since they moved in. I'm not religious, so thinking of some bishop waving incense around and babbling to a non-existent spirit just made me laugh, which I tried to hide as best as possible so as not to be rude to our customer. We were then informed not to be worried if anything odd happened to us, as things were just settling down now, following the visit from the clergy. We were also told that the spooks of the house didn't much care for noise or disturbance, which we would soon be creating plenty of with a twin vacuum carpet cleaning machine. Both my brother-in-law and I, as I'm sure you may already be able to tell, are skeptics of anything paranormal. But the story she began telling us was interesting, and we listened, even if either of us didn't believe it and thought that she was a bit nuts. She told us that the house dated from the late 1600s. It had been an orphanage and workhouse, a hotel, and eventually converted into three homes. this one being the largest and oldest, as various extensions had been added to the main building over the years. She then went on to tell us that back in the orphanage days, there was a fire and some kids had died upstairs as they couldn't escape the smoke. The place was also known and documented for its cruelty to those unfortunate enough to be dumped there by the state, and often they were beaten and starved for being mischievous and locked in a small storage cupboard, which I had passed as we did our recon upstairs a few minutes earlier, and oddly gave me a weird chill as I walked past it at the time. After it was converted to a hotel, there had been other numerous recorded deaths, as you would expect from a place as old and well lived in as it was. She then told us about one notable owner in particular, who in the 1800s collected exotic animals and had various menageries in the garden to showcase his collection to both the hotel guests and locals. It became quite the tourist attraction, with pleasant landscaped gardens for picnics and days out. A group of unfortunate builders that had been working on the place a few months before found out a little more firsthand about that part of the history. As they excavated the disused basement further out into the garden to turn it into a functional room for the family, the builders were subjected to objects being thrown at them, clothing being tugged, or their skin touched or scratched by unseen hands. The final straw came when they excavated further outwards, only to be greeted by a small skeleton in the soil. The builders, by this point, had experienced quite enough and packed up, leaving the job half finished, never to return. The forensic unit of the police and a coroner then had to be brought in, too, as it was believed the skeleton could be that of a human baby. As the forensic squad took over the digging, they unearthed more skeletons. Thankfully, rather than stumbling on some bizarre crime scene, it turned out that the skeletons were actually those of small monkeys, a favorite specimen of the Victorian hotel owner, and that when they died, he used that section of the garden just to bury them in. The owner then went on to tell us that most of the ghosties haunting the place were child spirits, and mostly benevolent or mischievous at most, with a particular fascination for metal objects, although there were more other sinister, older entities present too. Again, I took her story with a pinch of salt, all too while casting glances to my brother-in-law with a quizzical look on my face. She then mentioned more specific incidences that had happened to her and her family. The incidents had such an impact on her husband in particular that he refused to stay at the house if he was alone, but she was fine to stay to a degree. She mentioned a few different hauntings, where after putting her son to bed, voices whispering "Mum" could be heard drifting down the stairs from the floor above repeatedly while the couple watched TV. On investigating, the son was fast asleep. Once they returned downstairs, the voices would start again. This would happen almost every night. Likewise, footsteps on the floor above were often heard. Furniture would slide across the floor and there would be banging and clattering as items were moved around the house. Still, at this point, standing in the kitchen, prepping a spray bottle with some spot cleaner, I'm thinking, yeah, whatever, in my head, until she mentioned the next story, which did give me a bit of a chill. After waking up one morning, her husband went downstairs to find the house turned upside down, like it had been ransacked. Every single metal light switch and plug socket was unscrewed and hanging from the wall. The strangest thing of all, though, was that a solid, very heavy, cast iron fire gate had been lifted off its open-ended hinge and dumped right in the middle of the living room, a good 2 meters away from where it should have been. With another job to get to by 1 p.m., we started work and lugged the machine to the top of the stairs on its back wheels and set up the various pipes and hoses while applying the spot cleaner fluid to areas that needed attention. The machine was positioned on the landing where nobody from downstairs could get past so that we weren't interrupted while working. My brother-in-law went off into one room to spray and scrub some tough stains while I sprayed some spots near the creepy cupboard from earlier, while fixing my hair in a dusty mirror that hung next to it. Once the pre-treatment was completed, we joked a bit about what we had been told by the owner. Then he said, "If the ghosts don't like loud noises, then they won't like this," and flicked on the machine, which is deafening. That's when everything really started to take a turn for the weird. Taking turns with the cleaning wand and standing next to each other to support the vacuum pipe, the first odd thing was a darting shadow a few minutes into the cleaning. The skylight above the landing area was completely cast in darkness for a fleeting second. We looked at each other. "Did you see that?" my brother-in-law gestured. "Yeah," I nodded. With that, we promptly shut the machine down. We looked around, puzzled, and then looked at the skylight again. Maybe it was a bird? To put it simply, it would have had to been a very big bird. Literally, all of the daylight on the landing disappeared for a blink of an eye and was cast into relative darkness. With the next job of the day pressing, we carried on. The machine roared back into life with a flick of a switch, and we continued. Getting just a few more feet towards the stairs, the next weird thing happened. A coin, seemingly out of nowhere, pinged across and hit the wall between both of us. It was loud enough to be heard over the machine. Again, it was promptly switched off. "Did you do that?" my brother-in-law asked, who was also in my field of view the whole time. "No, I genuinely didn't. I had change in my pocket, but how does a coin magically fall out, then go at a completely right angle and hit a wall with so much force that it leaves a dent in the paint before falling to his shoe?" By this point, we were both starting to get a little freaked out by the two events and the stories that had been told downstairs. Maybe something odd was going on in this place. Maybe the stories were just getting to us. But the hairs started to stand on end, and we both became very edgy as we stood alone on the landing, trying to figure out what had just happened. Was it a practical joke being played on us by the owner or their kid, or both? Taking a breather, we both headed downstairs. Her son was in the living room eating cereal and watching TV, and she looked a little bemused, asking us if we were okay. We let her know what had just happened, and the most chilling part I remember is that her 10-year-old son turned around, shrugged, and said, "Yeah, this kind of thing happens every day," and his mom just laughed. My blood ran cold, especially when I tried to put on my skeptic hat to figure out how he or his mom could have rebounded a coin off of two opposing walls from the stairs that we could see to the bottom of with such force. I ended up going out for a cigarette to take 5 minutes away from what was happening. My brother-in-law stayed in the kitchen with the owner until I returned, not daring to venture upstairs without me. We returned to the landing, finished up without too much drama, except for being on edge. Also, with the machine now filled with wastewater, I removed the tank and drained it down the bathroom toilet. There was a weird feeling in that room, like being glared menacingly at from one of the corners. I was in and out of there pretty sharpish. I started on another room, and enough time had passed to start rationalizing that it was simply just a trick of the mind. I'd calmed down a little and just chalked it up to loose change falling out of a pocket. Well, no sooner had I regained some composure that my brother-in-law came back in with a stunned look on his face. I turned off the machine again. I was on my knees cleaning up a coffee stain at the base of the desk in the other room, and a CD slid from the top of the desk, hovered in front of my face, and then dropped to the floor, he said. My first reaction was bullshit, but he was ashen-faced. I walked into the room he was working on, and in front of the desk was a CD. I quizzed him for a good 5 minutes about how maybe he knocked it off the desk, but he was adamant that it literally hovered for a brief second before falling straight to the carpet. We switched jobs, and I went into that room. You might be thinking, well, if you're scared, then why do you keep splitting up? Well, we had a job to do that requires one person working ahead of the other for the most part. And despite being rattled, I doubt either of us felt threatened by the weird things going on, and certainly not in danger of something malevolent if it were paranormal and not some weird joke. Well, no sooner had I gotten in the room than I had my first odd thing happen while on my own. I was scrubbing another coffee stain close to the skirting board in full view of the door when my brother-in-law shouted at me. I left the room, handed him something while being the only person in the narrow hall, and then returned straight back to the room. Going back to the same spot I had just been working on, a large metal paperclip was now sat neatly on the half-scrubbed stain. I was, in a word, baffled. Cue my turn on being quizzed for 5 minutes on how it got there. So by now, we were both freaked out. If a typical ghost movie is anything to go by, there's a feeling like something is building in intensity, and build in intensity it did. It almost felt like a static charge in the air. We finished the rooms in a half-assed hurry and headed for the stairs, which we would work down with a hand tool, and then be back in the van and getting the hell out of there. My back was turned to the mirror and the spooky cupboard from the other side of the landing as I worked down step by step. By this point, two grown men were petrified, and I insisted that my brother-in-law stay at the top of the stairs so I could see him. For the fifth time or so, he cut the power to the machine again. I looked up at him, and to this day, I've never seen somebody turn so pale-faced in my entire life. He gestured at me to get to the top of the stairs and just said, "Look at the mirror," and took hold of my jaw and forced my head around to look at it, which was around 8 feet away on the opposite side of the landing. I looked into it and was looking to see if something was behind us, but I couldn't see anything. Then he said that something was writing on the mirror. Then, without warning, he flew down the stairs and out of the door. I don't know why I did this, even to this day, as every fiber in my being told me to run, but I walked to the mirror as my vision isn't great. The same dusty mirror I'd been vainly checking my hair in an hour earlier. And plain as day, there was writing on it. The funny thing was, the writing was in perfect old-style cursive. Both my brother-in-law's and my own handwriting is absolutely dreadful, and in this curly conjoined script, writing were simply two words, and a child's finger marks and handprint in the thick dust. It simply said in big letters, "Get out." My legs almost went from underneath me, and I've never been so scared in my life. We were alone on that landing. The mother and son were downstairs the whole time, plus the machine blocked them from the entire floor of the house. Adrenaline rushed through my body and I clamored to get my phone from my pocket with shaking hands. I managed to snap a couple of photos of the message on the mirror before bolting for the stairs. I just wish I had taken a video of it because on later review, the quality wasn't great and didn't do what I saw justice, although the writing can still be made out. So after composing ourselves outside again for another 10 minutes or so, we summoned up the courage to go back inside, rush the end of the job like never before, and pack up the equipment and get out in a hurry. We even received a very large tip from the lady just because we stayed the course and finished the job, which based on what she mentioned was a rarity for tradesmen. After getting back in the van, my brother-in-law drove a short distance and pulled over. We talked about it for the rest of the day and haven't talked about it since. So, am I still a skeptic? Yes. Well, for the most part. For an analytical mind, experiences have to be based on logic and the established rules of physics and science. What happened that day, I cannot explain, no matter how many times I've tried to understand. Was it an elaborate and highly choreographed joke by the family? A paranormal experience? I simply cannot explain what happened at that house on that day. One thing is for sure, though, I know that when I stood outside, looking back at the foreboding stone building once again, I knew that I would not go back inside again to find out. All right, this next one comes from Greg, and he says, "This is a small story that happened to me when I was about 14 or 15 years old. Back in 2008, my uncle passed away at the age of 48, coincidentally, on his birthday. Anyways, when I was 14 or 15 years old, my girlfriend Selena and I went to my grandmother's house for a week in the middle of the summer. It was the third night of our stay, and my grandma decided to let Selena and I sleep in her bedroom. Yes, I know, bad idea given our ages, but that's not important. Anyways, she let us sleep in her room. Selena and I decided around 11:30 p.m. that we were going to go to the bedroom and watch a movie after we had just finished watching one with my grandmother in the living room. My grandmother slept on the couch while we were there. Anyways, a few hours had passed, and at this time, it was around 3:10 a.m. Selena had passed out, and I was sure my grandmother had too. I was laying beside Selena, playing my Xbox, and all of a sudden, I heard someone, or something, in the kitchen. I figured that it was my grandma waking up to make her early morning coffee. However, I quickly realized that wasn't the case. I peeked out into the kitchen, only to see an apparition of a man standing there, stirring a cup of coffee. I quickly woke Selena and asked her if she saw what I was seeing. She did. We both slowly moved out past the kitchen table and into the living room, where my grandmother was actually awake, sitting in her chair in the dark. At this point, I noticed she was staring into the kitchen. I asked her, "Gram, what are you looking at?" She explained to us that she saw exactly what Selena and I both were seeing. At that point, I decided to make my way into the kitchen towards the figure. As I make my way closer to this apparition, the man who was still stirring the cup of coffee looks at me and smiles. At this point, I had noticed it was my uncle whom I had mentioned above that had passed away a few years earlier. As I called his name, he disappeared. What was freaky was the fact there was a fresh cup of coffee sitting on the counter with the spoon still in it. I walked over and picked it up. I then took a smell and noticed the scent almost instantly. 3 cream, 4 sugar. I then decided to take a sip of the coffee, and to my surprise, there it was. It tasted exactly how my uncle and I both love to drink our coffee. All right, and this last one comes from Tyler, and he says, "This happened when I was around 12 or 13 years old. Taking place during the winter, my state was under a severe blizzard emergency. It was snowing like crazy, but my friend and I didn't really care and wanted to take advantage of all the snow. So we decided to go outside and went to a nearby elementary school playground. From what I remember, the snow was coming down really hard, but we were having fun. The school itself was closed. There wasn't a single car in the parking lot. Looking through the windows, the school was clearly dark and empty. But then, out of nowhere, in the distance, a lady suddenly appeared, staring out a window. At first, I didn't think much of it because I figured that it must have been an employee or a teacher. But like I said, the parking lot was empty and the school was dead, no pun intended. So it didn't make sense for her to be inside the building. But I just ignored her and continued hanging out with my friend. About an hour went by, and when I looked back at the school, I could see her still staring out the window. She hadn't moved at all. She was like a statue. So just to make sure I wasn't seeing things, I decided to walk towards the school to get a better look. I ended up getting super close to the window that she was staring out of. I could still see her, clear as day. I actually waved at her to see if I could get her attention, but it's like she didn't even see me. It's like I didn't even exist. She was staring into blank space. I then even tapped on the window and still nothing. The closer I looked at her, I knew something wasn't quite right. I got the chills. I still get the chills even thinking about it. I then yelled over to my friend to get his opinion on this mysterious lady, and when I turned around, she was gone. Completely vanished. Fast forward a couple days later, in a nearby neighborhood, my friend and I actually knew a lady who was a teacher at that school. I told her about seeing the lady in the window. She looked so confused. She said in a really suspicious manner, "There was a lady inside the school?" She then explained that due to the blizzard, that the school had been on complete lockdown for over a week, and that there was no reason that any teacher or staff member should have been inside the building. So to this very day, the lady in the window is still a mystery, and I'm convinced that she was a ghost. All right. Well, thank you again to everyone who sent in their stories. I hope you guys liked some of those. As always, they're super creepy. I love when you guys send me in your stories. And I hope your listeners are able to sleep tonight after hearing some of those. Again, if you have a story you want me to read, please email me at weirdontherocks@yahoo.com or find me on Instagram and Facebook at Weird on the Rocks Podcast and just send me a message. I would love to hear from you guys. All right. Until next time, cheers and stay weird.
That was a Titancast episode.